real change for our children and our future.
Just, 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 just! Justy! Oi! Oi, I'm going to get the child! You're all on camera, mate. You're all on camera.
Because today, I can announce that the government will ban access to social media for all children under the age of 16.
Can you please put your hands up, those of you who welcome the ban? Hands up for those who welcome the ban. So this just gives you an idea. I think it's pretty fair to say that most of these students there, 11 to 14, most are pretty disappointed with the ban. Let's just come over to you, Isabella. Tell me how you felt when you heard the Prime Minister say no more social media for you.
I didn't think it would actually happen. I kind of believed that he'd chicken out of it and give it more time or more consideration, but he seems pretty sure of it, and I'm not sure if I agree with him.
Government is always about choices, and it's clear to me that a full ban is the right choice. Now, I come to it as a parent myself. I know exactly the fears that we all feel when we're thinking about this issue.
A shadowy secret spy unit inside the government is being accused of being used as a propaganda tool to control the public. This has been spoken about a couple of times before, but I don't think anyone has broadcast it nationally. And if it's true, it is terrifying.
You know, all I've ever wanted for my own children, hand on heart, is for them to be happy and for them to be safe.
In a brazen power grab disguised as child protection, UK Prime Minister Keir Starmer has unleashed one of the most authoritarian digital lockdowns in Western history, banning all under 16s from major social media platforms like TikTok, Instagram, Snapchat, YouTube, X, and beyond. Oddly enough, Starmer will not be banning the leftist toxic cesspool Blue Sky. This so-called Australia Plus regime, set to roll out by spring 2027, demands invasive age verification, facial scans, digital IDs, and big tech enforcement, backed by multi-million pound fines. While Starmer preens about shielding kids from his bloated harms.
These days, kids have to find their feet in a world that changes so quickly, where technology intrudes into every area of their lives. And we know that harms them.
So, the social media thing with Keir Starmer, not 1% of me thinks this is coming from a good place. He's not helping kids in education. He's actively closing schools and limiting opportunities to kids. He is actively giving companies money to give jobs to young people from abroad rather than young kids in the UK when we're seeing record levels of youth unemployment. He's not helping kids get fitter. There's no more sports in schools. He's not helping them with good nutrition and advice. He's always pushing medication.
The real endgame screams louder than any TikTok algorithm, eroding parental authority, funneling youth toward state-approved echo chambers, and paving the way for broader censorship under the guise of protecting the vulnerable. Time to wake up, Western civilization. This is the soft tyranny of the nanny state morphing into full digital Orwellian dictatorship. John Bowne reporting for the Alex Jones Network at alexjoneslive.com.
We are unified by our spirit that God made and our connection to the creator of the universe and our children. And this is the genesis point of the new revolution of information.
I will always believe and I will always say in public that Alex Jones is the most extraordinary person I've ever met.
I'll tell you, that f***ing guy is right about a lot of shit.
Alex Jones has been right a lot of times.
Alex has been right on for over a decade.
Fluoride, just like Alex Jones was saying, not good. It's crazy.
The real war's here with the globalists and Soros and Obama and the New World Order and BlackRock.
AlexJones.network is tomorrow. thanks for having me. Before I start, wanted to pitch a couple of the products there for the listeners. The bovine colostrum's been fantastic. My mom had tremendous results, similar to the results your mom had with her hair and skin. Methylene blue, the mental clarity, the focus has been amazing. I just found that I just needed to up the dose a little bit from the recommendation, and then that really hit. So definitely helps to support the broadcast. Alex, the reason you're so successful and the reason so many people chime in is because you have the best guests. That does include Victor Boot, but I will reference the legendary Gerald Celente. What does he say time after time? When there's nothing left, they take us to war.
The bovine colostrum is incredible. The methylene blue, you fund us. You're our funders, not the Israelis or the Muslims or the Russians or the U.S. government. You fund us at thealexjonesstore.com. And the new news site for all the feeds and articles is alexjoneslive.com. And on Rumble, rumble.com/TheAlexJonesShow Live. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to the War Room. I am your host today, Rex Jones. Looks like I might be here more this week as well. Thank you for joining me. I want to remind you to repost, reshare, live link, live feed, retweet it on Twitter at AJN Live. We're going to have a great show for you today. I'm going to be joined by Suleiman here in a little while, and then I'll be joined by Alex Stein possibly in the third hour, possibly taking your calls as well. You're going to want to stay with me here, and like I said, follow AJN Live on Twitter. Very important. But today is one of those days where things have stopped being static. So I get that everyone gets tired of the war. I'm already tired of it too, being pro-peace, anti-war. I demand that it all end now and that all our troops come home, that we disband all our bases, that we get ourselves the hell out of that region, declaring victory and going home, as Joe Kent so often says. But how do we get there? How do we get there? There's going to be an MOU, according to Trump. There's going to be a peace agreement, some sort of deal. I've got a bunch of crazy clips of him talking about the nuclear dust and possibly excavating that still in the future. He's still on that. It seems to be almost more for psychological purposes. But the thing that's really important to understand, and I just want to remind everybody at home so we don't get gaslit here, the Strait of Hormuz was open before the United States and Israel closed it in an illegal war of aggression on Iran. So we're just trying to get back to where we were, okay? And we're going to get into why this is a big deal and why this is a great victory if it goes through, if Trump is actually able to stick to his guns and extricate himself, which I'm not sure he's going to be able to do. We're going to get into that. I want to express to people on the MAGA side, on the MIGA side, on the Israel First side, I want to express to those people, I want to be a little herald today and knock on the door like the Grim Reaper in that meme and let you know your coalition is dead. Because we're seeing Trump, even though he might not be successful, try to extricate himself or trying to extricate himself from this situation. And we're seeing the crash out. We're seeing the Israelis blow up. We're seeing Ben-Gavir come out there. We're seeing Naftali Bennett come out there. We're seeing all of them come out there. His approval rating in Israel, the thing that really matters to him, it was like plus 25%. Now it's like minus 27%. So we're going to get into all of that and more. I want to roll Trump. I want to roll this clip of him telling the truth, okay? And this is the truth that everybody knows, that everybody is fully aware of. Looking for my clip list. I need to get another one. I want to go ahead and play this one. Trump criticizes Israel's methods in Lebanon. You don't have to knock down an apartment house every single time. And this is a key point that we've made. Hey, they say, there's a Hezbollah, Mark Levin, there's a Hezbollah terrorist inside that building. We have to kill 100 innocent people. And it's like, no, that's not how war works. Not how the law of war works. You're not supposed to just murder civilians willy-nilly whenever you want. Let's go ahead and go to that clip, and we have it because it's truly insane. This is Trump expressing the truth that we all know. The truth we know about Gaza, truth we know about Lebanon, truth we know about Iran as well, with the school we blew up there. We target innocent civilians and we wash it away and call it collateral damage. The rest of the world doesn't like us doing that. And until now, they haven't really had a means to tell us no. Well, Iran is telling us no, ladies and gentlemen. Do we have the clip?
Does not like them. And I'll tell you what, Israel's fighting Hezbollah too long and too many people are being killed. And you don't have to knock down an apartment house every time you're looking for somebody, because there are a lot of people in those apartment houses and they're not all Hezbollah, that I can tell you.
I mean, what else do you want to hear?
You know, like those elementary school students that we murdered and their teachers, they weren't Hamas, they weren't Hezbollah, they weren't IRGC. You know, it's the same as he's talking about here. Please stop killing innocent civilians in Lebanon. And there's a longer clip where he also goes, you know, I saw what happened. They used drones and the response to that attack, it was very nasty or whatever he said. He called out Netanyahu directly and paraphrasing, he called it unwarranted, called it excessive, called it grotesque. And if you're recognizing it in one aspect of what we've seen so far, why aren't you recognizing it in every other day that you've signed off, looked away, washed your hands of whatever's happened across the Middle East? And you got to keep in mind, this is the one president that we've elected that claimed to have a grasp of human life and claimed to not want people to die and claimed that he wanted no new neocon wars in the Middle East. We're going to go ahead and go to more of these clips here. Go to clip number two, where he says he doesn't believe in regime change. Well, you certainly believed in it when everybody said we would be able to do it in 24 to 48 hours. The initial goal of this war stated to everyone and stated over and over again in between the lies of Iran must never have a nuclear weapon. We must disarm Hamas and Hezbollah. That was not the reason for the war. The reason for the war was not symptomatic. It was the disease, to address the disease, talking from the U.S.-Israeli Empire perspective. They're being threatened in the region by another peer power in the Levant. What are they going to do? They are going to affect a color revolution. They are going to affect a regime change. They're going to do what they did in Libya. They're going to do what they did in Syria. They're going to try to do what they did in Iraq and fail to do. Same thing with Afghanistan, fail to do it there as well. They're trying to do it to Iran because, as Wesley Clark outlined in the early 2000s, seven countries in 5 years, this is what they do. This is what they do. So go play the clip.
He's done an amazing job of pulling it together. He's not a Boy Scout, but he's done an amazing job of pulling it together. And he is very good with Hezbollah, does not like them. And I'll tell you what, Israel's fighting Hezbollah too long and too many people are being killed. And you don't have to knock down an apartment house every time you're looking for somebody.
Yes.
Because there are a lot of people in those apartment houses and they're not all Hezbollah, that I can tell you. And I suggested to Israel to let Syria take care of Hezbollah.
Pause it. Okay, so what does that mean? It sounds all nice, you know, friendship is magic, super friends, Teen Titans Go, you know, just gonna, our good old buddy Syria. Syria's gonna come on in and help us out. I'm doing my George W. Bush impression. Do I sound good? Do I sound like George W. Bush? We're gonna bring him in. We're gonna bring the moderate rebels again. I wanna give people a history class, a little bit of a refresher. I know if you're watching this program, humor me, you're probably even more educated than I am, but let's break it down a little bit. Al-Julani changes his name to Al-Shara, meets with our president as the new, I guess, president himself of Syria. How does he get there? Al-Shara, formerly Al-Julani, is the former regional head of Al-Qaeda in Syria, okay? He gets thrown in an American prison or black site for 5 years. He comes out reading the New York Times and speaking perfect English. And during the Russia-Ukraine war, people got to keep in mind, a lot of people say, well, total strategic failure, no reason for us to be in that war, whatever. Yes, it doesn't make sense for America, it doesn't make sense for Europe. But if you look at the Russia-Ukraine war in the context of the Middle East, it was the Russia-Ukraine war that made the Russians unable to support their ally Assad, Bashar al-Assad in Syria, right? So you have Al-Julani, he comes out of jail, he's given access to these loosely organized 300 terror cells, or I heard somebody report on Judge Knapp, I know that it's true, so I'm just going to say it, 300 terror cells that all speak with translators and are run by teams of translators. Huh, who runs teams of translators that work with terrorists? Would that happen to be us or MI6 or the Mossad? That sounds more likely. So basically, we've got this puppet state in Syria that we've taken over. They've ceded land to Israel, the Golan Heights. Israel has been loosely, again, friendly with them and whatnot. Now we're seeing that's over, okay? And Trump is going to try to bring the Syrians, or I guess not really the Syrians, but Al-Julani and his terror cartel gang in to finish the problem that Bibi Netanyahu and Ben-Gvir were unable to complete the objective on. So what is that going to look like? Keep in mind, Al-Shara al-Julani is not some quiet, simple guy that reads poetry and watches the Harry Potter movies. Al-Julani is a brutal head chopper who has killed thousands, if not tens of thousands, of Christian, Shia Muslims, and other religious minorities such as Alawites, wiping the sweat off his brow. He doesn't care about human life. He doesn't care about anything. Oh, Assad. Oh, the human rights abuses of Assad. Bashar al-Assad. Oh, so evil. Oh, so evil. Look at photos of Assad and his wife, and then look at photos of Gulani and his wife, and Gulani's wife is wearing not even the hijab, respectfully, she's wearing the full burqa, okay? So we witnessed a transformation from a multicultural, secular country where people are allowed to practice their religion, whether it be Shia Islam, Christianity, the Alawites, or whatever. We see that going away from that into now, it is only Sunni, it is only his theocratic cult, and he is a new, you know, terrorist dictator. But he is one that comes to the White House. Go ahead and get a photo of him at the White House with Trump up, and Trump shakes his hand and goes, wow, this guy really smells amazing. What kind of perfume does this guy use? Let me tell you, it's true. I'm not even joking, okay? Look, so moderate rebels, you know, we always back the peaceful people. It's a good thing that al-Shara is now, or al-Julani, excuse me, is now in charge. And remember, if somebody tries to gaslight you, if someone tries to tell you, oh, no, man, that's al-Shara, he's a good guy, that's al-Julani, Christian murderer, Muslim murderer, minority murderer, that's who that guy is. So when Trump says that we're going to bring in the Syrians to fix the problem, how do you think the Lebanese people feel about the prospect of having the al-Qaeda and terrorist leader, al-Julani, come into their country with 300 terrorist cells to rape, murder, torture, and steal? You think maybe they're not going to like that? You think maybe Iran, as the leader of the Axis of Resistance, is not going to like the brutal terrorist activities of the radical anthropomorphous Salafi Sunni Muslims? You think they're going to enjoy that? I don't think so. So here's the thing. I got a ton of clips for you guys. I have Suleiman coming up, a leading geopolitical analyst, literally talks to everybody. I'm going to get to everything today. It's crazy how I come in here and I'm like, oh, dude, I got to do a 3-hour show. And then I realize I don't have enough time. I don't even have enough time here. I could do a 12-hour show. I could stream all day talking about this stuff. I talked about it this morning and it's just refreshing my memory now. The cool thing about Suleiman is he talks to geopolitical analysts of all stripes, of all backgrounds, of all different career paths, and all different nationalities as well. We're going to get a full spectrum picture from him. Here's the thing. Here's the debate. And I've been on Moral Resistance. I've been on his channel. I've been on other people's channels and spaces as well talking about this. Is a peace deal even possible? What does a peace deal even mean? Sure, there's an MOU. Sure, there's an opening of the strait. Sure, there's a relief of sanctions, whatever. In any world where Donald John Trump has to give the Iranians more money than Obama, that will be used like a cudgel to beat him over the head into submission, and it'll lead to a situation where peace is impossible. And we've reached a situation already where peace is impossible. That's why we're at the negotiation table, is because we're realizing with the way that we're currently operating, we cannot enforce our strategic interest in the region at all anymore. That's why we've sued for peace, by the way. We need that strait to be reopened. It's only closed for us. It's closed for us and our allies in Israel, okay? So we need that open. The rest of the world, you know, they've been making their own arrangements. They've been figuring things out. It's hurt them. Sure, but it's hurting us more. And you can bleed your reserves and do whatever with the petroleum. It all runs out eventually. So with all that being said, is peace actually possible? Are the Israelis going to allow Trump to back out and leave? I just watched the leader of the opposition party, I believe his name is Naftali Bennett, or maybe another guy, I don't want to slander anybody, say that, yeah, Netanyahu is not going far enough, and that when I go in, I'll promise to destroy the Iranian regime and all that. And the thing, sorry, with whose military, man? Look at this. Stop this terrorist, Mohammed al-Julani. Go ahead and click back on that. Wanted for $10 million. $10 million. Crawls into a CIA black site, U.S. prison, whatever it was. They shave that guy. They take him to a Brooks Brothers or Joseph A. Bank, and he becomes the maitre d' of the Golden Corral. Trump told Iranian protesters help is on the way, but the peace deal leaves the mullahs more powerful than ever. Yup. It's almost like we could never win and we solidified the hardliners. It's almost like we killed the guy that banned the nuclear weapon in 2003. Like the turbo never go full retard stuff that we're dealing with here. And just to get back to what I'm trying to say earlier, like, is it possible to end all this? No. No, it's not, because any concession, any deal you give them, it's not that we wouldn't say it's fine. I would say it's great. I would say, come on, like, I'm ready for it, whatever. Make the Gulf states pay. It is what it is. But you can't do that because of Israel, because of the media infrastructure, because of how they'll beat the old man into submission in the head over and over and over again on this problem. The only solution is what Joe Kent says, just declare victory and leap. We're the greatest nation on earth. We have all these nuclear weapons. Why can't we go? Why can't we get out of there? It would be nice to get out of there soon rather than later. We can just pick our asses up and leave. It does not have to be that complicated. Look how sick that terror storm graphic is. Man, Austin, if you're watching, Austin's kind of my Rob Dew producer. Austin, if you're watching, we need stuff like this. Edited by Rob Jacobson, the Weasel. Visual effects. Wow. Wow. Very, very cool that y'all threw that up. But yeah, is a peace deal possible? Is it more war? I lean towards more war. People like Larry Johnson and Pepe Escobar, geopolitical analysts who are basically never wrong, who I really respect. There was talk a couple weeks ago, and this is how fast news moves right now, by the way. There was talk like a week or a week and a half ago that Iran had gotten the bomb or had acquired the bomb and let Pakistan know via unsecure line. That means the rest of the world knows as well because we spy on everybody. And that's what caused, you know, more of the positive attitude from like the Trump administration and whatnot, and kind of a softening of the U.S. tone. I don't know if I believe that anymore, because I think if that was true, we would have told the Israelis about it. And I think if the Israelis knew about it, they would have already nuked Iran. So maybe that's why we didn't tell them. You know, who knows? The reality is we as the greatest country on earth should be able to call the shots and have our own manifest destiny. We shouldn't be the junior partner waiting on a nation of 9 million people to tell us what to say. And this is also what I wanted to get into. The state of Israel is like between like 9 and 11 million people. However many people it is. Isn't that ironic? Between 9 and 11 million people. Okay. They're over there. They're the biggest recipient of foreign aid from us. They're the biggest recipient of our missiles, our destroyed military infrastructure, our radar, all parked around them to protect them, all of it. You can look at the cost in a variety of ways. You can look at the $110 billion we spent on the war, plus the radar systems, 20 blown up, or between 10 and 20 blown up, between $300 to $600 million each. You can look at the, excuse me, a little burp there. You can look at all the munitions that we've expended as well, just truly insane, ridiculous figures when it comes to all this stuff. You can't even quantify the real cost of it all. And we don't even care to do so because it's their military. It's not ours. We're the junior partner. It is like something that belongs to you that you give to your little brother. And now they're trying to enshrine that into law. I'm going to go ahead and read this, but I've covered Section 224 before with Joe Kent and Anthony Aguilar. It's super important for people to understand. Right now, this is all voluntary. These are voluntary decisions. This is us saying, hey, you're our greatest ally. We will allow you to use our military equipment for XYZ. They are going to have their own Secretary of Defense equivalent, who's higher than everyone else at DOD, involved in that department managing the wars. And he only answers to the Secretary of Defense and the president once a year. And he doesn't answer to Congress. Congress has no checks or balances on it. It's like you're screwing the hooker. And the hooker moves into your house and takes it over. That is where we are as a country, as a state. It's very, very disturbing. Go ahead and go to clip number three, which is me kind of referencing the Obama thing and Trump's obsession with Obama.
It's consequent.
I terminated the Iran nuclear deal. Barack Hussein Obama sold out Israel for Iran. He went to Iran. He sold them out. How anybody can vote for this guy or the party,
pause
the Democrats.
We're not voting for Obama, okay? It's not, when was the last time he was up for election? 2012? I really, really don't care. I really, really don't care. And the Democrats, the Democrats, ha, ha, ha. Have we not lost $110 billion, 13 American lives, and God knows how much more in radar munitions and equipment? And not to mention regional stability and our global hegemony, which has been thrown away in this war. We did to ourselves in 3 months what we claim we'd be able to do to the Russians in a year with the initial Ukraine thing. Oh, we're going to back Ukraine. We're going to deplete Russia's military. Are you kidding me? Look around. So that only applies to them and not us, because anyone I talk to that's pro-war, they claim Hegseth's a bad source, Rubio's a bad source, Pambani's a bad source, J.D. Vance is a bad source. We have infinite munitions, as many as we want, as many as required from the argument. all the images of war crimes and genocide you've seen are AI. Like, these are the arguments of the pro-war people, and you start to realize they're functionally insane. Okay, they're crazy, because what is the definition of insanity? Ladies and gentlemen, little pregnant pause there, let you think. My dad often, he'll do that. He'll just go, and I'm not even going to get into it. And then he'll say something again. And then you're like, whoa, I'm listening to it in the car. So I forgot what I was going to say there. Little brain freeze. What was I saying, crew? What was I saying? Y'all remember? I know y'all are listening to me. All right, pro-war people. Yeah, okay. All right. Just go ahead and go to clip five really quick.
So the Atomic Energy just reported that it was one of the most devastating bombings that they've ever seen. The whole mountain collapsed on top of it. And frankly, to go get it, we're going to go get it. But to go get it is a big deal. Because they say only China and us have the equipment where you can even get. The whole mountain has collapsed on top. We have cameras yes. on it. You could make the case, why are you even bothering? Because it's not really valuable. It's, you know, it's probably $500,000 worth. It's not very valuable stuff. But I think psychologically we're one together.
Yeah, exactly. You know, the thing I was saying earlier, the pro-war people will always make the argument that we achieved something with all this and remind them we achieved absolutely nothing that wasn't already happening before, right? We got taken into the conflict and we started the conflict as a result of that. It's like someone picking you up at your house and says, hey, do you want to go commit a bank robbery? And then you go get in the car. You're like, sure. So like we're accomplices before and after the fact, whether we're the getaway driver or we're actually robbing the bank ourselves, which I would argue we are. What is the point of getting the nuclear dust out of Fordo, out of whatever, okay? Anyone you send to do that is like going to go die and get cancer and be like horrifically sick. It doesn't mean anything. They're not developing a nuclear weapon. They said they weren't. They said they'll maintain that as part of the MOU. You killed the guy that banned the nuclear weapon as well after bombing Fordo, Nahansk, and Isfahan. After bombing the three main nuclear sites, then we kill the guy that banned the nuclear weapon. Does that make any sense at all? That doesn't make any sense at all. It makes zero sense, ladies and gentlemen, because it's not designed to. Okay, it's not insane, or it's not sane, it's insane. Definition of insanity, like I was saying earlier, is doing the same thing over and over and over again and expecting a different result. Every single time we spend more money in the Middle East, we're doing that. Every single time we send somebody off to die, we're doing that. Every single time we launch a missile, we're doing that. So why can't we try something different and take our bag and go home? There's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing dishonorable about that. It's a stop to the killing. It's a stop to the murder. Even if we mean to do good, it's like Israel has us blindfolded and we're thrashing around destroying people. Okay? So in that case, let's not play the game. It's a crazy game. The only way to win is not to play. And I want to remind you all, go to thealexjonesstore.com for the best in show water filtration, apparel, hats, t-shirts, supplements, you name it. And of course, wouldn't be the show if I didn't do my little methylene blue. It's time for methylene blue, Rex. What do we got here? We got here in the bottle here. Look at that goodie right there. We got a little goodie right there. Wash that goodie down with some iced tea. And then I'm back in the game. I've got Suleiman joining me next segment. You can get the capsule, the liquid, the methylene red, whatever you want to get at thealexjonesstore.com. I want to remind people, we got best in show water filtration. I've always called myself, when women ask me what I do, and oftentimes I'll lie, I'll just say I'm a humble water filter merchant. I've been saying that since I was like 12 years old. You can be too. Go get one for yourself and the methylene blue. I'll see you next segment with Suleiman.
Inflation is up. That's an issue. So how does Berkshire handle that with its business?
Well, we can't handle runaway inflation except not to be there. But there are dozens and dozens of countries that have experienced it. And of course, you have countries that have gone bankrupt like six or seven times. I mean, not having faith in the money does to a country. It turns it into something else. Yeah. And I've always hoped that the U.S. never does it, but we are not immune from it happening.
Dollar collapse means we keep continuing on where we are. Dollar devalues,
We've got massive inflation. You raise interest rates to slow that inflation down. So the implications of that are bond market is toast because the value of bonds, the price of bonds comes down as interest rates rise. The inverse is also true. When interest rates come down, the value of bonds goes up. So as you raise interest rates, the value of bonds comes down. Who's allocated into bonds? The bond market is way larger than the equity market, the stock market. So you've got pension funds that are allocated into bonds, right? Anybody that's on a fixed income, banks are allocated into bonds. Consider this, an insurance company. Most insurance companies across the country are allocated about 90% into the bond market with their internal portfolios. What does an insurance company do? It pays beneficiaries when people die, right? So if the asset that they have to sell to pay those beneficiaries is coming down in price, this is gonna have a cataclysmic effect on the insurance industry, on pension funds, on everything, and on the banking system.
And let's be clear though, a dollar being the world currency is how we could just print it and buy whatever we wanted. If the world sees it like the Mexican peso or worse, we're screwed.
Yeah, because that was our get out of jail free card, right? We could print as much money as we want and everybody around the world still needed the US dollar. If you don't have reserve currency status like every other country, other than the one that has reserve currency status, when you print excessively, people no longer want your currency. Don't let the news scare you, but rather use the wisdom, the creativity that God gave you. Go into tangible assets that have zero counterparty risk. Silver was up over 140% last year. Since January 30th, when it corrected and it had a 50% correction, went down into the 60s, it's almost 90. Literally since February, silver's up over 30%, Alex. So you can roll over your IRAs. You have an old 401k, roll that over. Your brokerage accounts, take delivery of it at home or store it at a depository. If you don't want to take delivery of it at home, we'll walk you through that, answer your questions, make sure that you feel comfortable with everything because it's ultimately your decision. We're just here to help guide and go on this journey with you. 1,000-ounce bars of silver, 100-ounce bars, 10-ounce bars, or 1-ounce generic refinery rounds.
But then you can roll over the financial instruments too.
1-ounce gold bars or kilo bars, IRAs. If it has IRA in the name, simple, SEP, Roth, traditional, inherited, we can do that. Or you can do just a brokerage account that you just wire as funds, and it's a non-IRA account.
Is it wholesale? And are they buying it back with no cost? No fee. This is the place to go. And we'll get into gold and silver as well. Dr. Kirk Elliott, KEPM.com/gold. That way they know it comes from us. So it supports the broadcast. KEPM.com/gold or 720-605-3900. 720-605-3900. Call and get a free consultation or sign up for email. They'll call you back. They can also roll over a lot of financial instruments. This is the place to go. KEPM.com/gold. So gold and silver is the way to go. The best investment for the last 2+ years. And you just check the wholesale price every day. That's what you get it for. You sell it back. For no cost, nobody else of any size does that. That's real.
The Pentagon just cranked Israel's counterintelligence threat level all the way up to critical, the highest designation. Right there with our worst adversaries. U.S. officials are now using burner phones and staying tight-lipped in hotel rooms when they visit Israel because the Israelis are aggressively spying on top Trump administration people, digging for inside dope on decisions about Iran and Lebanon. This isn't some rogue operation. It's all coordinated. Hyper-aggressive espionage from our so-called closest ally. Jonathan Pollard-style damage from the past should have been a warning. But here we are again. Americans are rightly asking how an ally that spies on us at this level gets treated like family.
With me, I don't care if you start throwing nukes immediately, responsibly, but immediately. And a case that I've been pushing is the use of an electromagnetic pulse weapon or weapons against Iran. Why are we waiting to get hit?
That's Jonathan Pollard, the most famous Israeli spy in modern history, who sold out our secrets, got our agents killed, you name it. He sold to the Russians, the Chinese, the Israelis, everybody.
And remember, Trump pardoned him back at the end of his first administration. So now Israel's funding will be within the Pentagon in joint weapons development, but they're going to be allowed into everything and be able to claim co-ownership of the U.S. military-industrial complex that Eisenhower told us to beware the technological elite that control the military-industrial complex. So think about that. Then you've got 38 states that have passed laws or executive orders that if you criticize Israel anyway, or ever boycott Israel, or criticize Zionism, or what happened in Gaza, these are laws that you cannot have any government contracts or government jobs. Totally illegal, unconstitutional tyranny. And that's because Israel admits they're moving their weapons industries here to the United States. And so now if you criticize anything Israel's doing, you're shut down by the state governments, violating our First Amendment. You add that with the NDAA, National Defense Authorization Act, you got to read that for yourself. Total lifetime fusion integration of everything, from academia to DARPA to MIT to secret weapons development to live intelligence, telemetry, weapons guidance, weapons systems, everything. Remember, the other agencies don't even let each other know what they're doing. The other armed services branches are in competition and let them have their secrets. And that's good to keep things compartmentalized. This is, Congress doesn't even know 10% of what the Pentagon's up to. This is Israel's coup against America.
The real gut punch is what's happening in Congress at the exact same time. On the heels of the revelation of Section 224 slowly advancing, Senator Tom Cotton slipped Section 622 into the FY27 Intelligence Authorization Act. This thing locks America into permanent, unbreakable intelligence entanglement with Israel. It mandates expanded sharing, ties it to Israel's qualitative military edge, restricts the president or future Congress from scaling it back without jumping through huge legal hoops and notifying bought and paid for committees, and even pushes sharing with Abraham Accords countries. There will be no unwinding this. We are looking at intel fusion as a pillar of policy, handing over leverage that could bite us hard if relations sour. We'll find ourselves either towing the line for Israel or facing serious consequences. Meanwhile, the Pentagon flags Israel as a top spy threat, and lawmakers are wiring them deeper into our system. This isn't partnership. It's a one-way street that smells like foreign influence money run amok. America first means putting our sovereignty and secrets ahead of any foreign lobby. It's not optional, and it's a major insult on this 250th anniversary of our nation. John Bound reporting for the Alex Jones Network at alexjoneslive.com.
Let's hope we don't die in thermonuclear war. Let's hope our military isn't turned over to a foreign government. Let's hope Section 224 fails in the Senate, even though we've got 60 out of 99 senators are boomers. Let's hope that we actually have some sovereignty left as a nation. While we wait for Suleiman to join us of Moral Resistance, a phenomenal geopolitical analyst and host to some of the biggest talking heads and names that you hear of, whether that's Larry Johnson, whether that's Pepe Escobar, and many of these other champions of freedom and liberty in the modern information war, information age. I want to go ahead and get into the leaked memorandum. Let's go ahead and pull this up for people. I want to read from it, and let's just pick this apart and see, you know, is this going to be something that a real MIGA, M-I-G-A, Make Israel Great Again, is going to be able to ascertain or accept? Let's go ahead and get that up. Point number one, the Islamic Republic of Iran. It's all right. It's so hard. Come back to me. I swear I've been like getting possessed because I've been watching Mark Levin clips. And I've been watching him in the car, listening to him in the car, and I've been working on my impression. I was like, my impressions are pretty good. I got a good Trump. I got a good Bill Clinton. I got a good Joe Biden. I got a good Bush. And now I have a good Mark Levin because I've been listening to him because it's been cracking me up. But it's kind of been possessing me and taking me over. When I think about Hamas and Hezbollah and how American soldiers won't go fight and die for Israel, it gets me really upset. But I'll go ahead and read it without doing the Levin impression. This is the MOU leaked as we understand it. It could be wrong, but I'll read it. Point number one. The Islamic Republic of Iran and the United States, together with their allies in the current war, declare upon the signing of the MOU, understanding an immediate and permanent end to the war on all fronts, including Lebanon. Okay, So there's been, we'll pick it apart line by line. So there's been a lot of bones to pick. There's been a lot of kvetching from Mark Levin and other types over Lebanon. I would say to this, because this is apparently just a peace deal between the U.S. and Iran, not the U.S. and Israel. Aren't the Israelis the ones that are blowing up Lebanon? Isn't that already not us? So if this is just a deal between Iran and the U.S., then why would you even put Lebanon in there? We're not invading Lebanon right now. So I think the narrative, and I got like a Jerusalem Post article here, Israel not mentioned in reported leaked draft of U.S.-Iran deal. I think that's BS, even if it's not directly stated, because you don't say that. An immediate and permanent end to war or to the war on all fronts, including Lebanon. And then, it's Netanyahu, it's the Israelis. What are you going to do? I'll keep reading it. And undertake that from now on, they will not launch any hostile action against each other and will refrain from the threat or use of force against each other. The final agreement will confirm the provisions of this article and the remaining articles. Point number two, the Islamic Republic of Iran and the United States undertake to respect each other's sovereignty and territorial integrity and to refrain from interfering in each other's internal affairs. Oh, no more color revolution? No more flying in the Starlink and giving the people missiles and guns to overthrow their government? No more of that? No more of Lindsey Graham's 1776 option? I guess not. Point number three, the Islamic Republic of Iran and the United States undertake to negotiate and reach a final agreement within a maximum period of 2 months, extendable by mutual consent. So this is probably going to end up being like an armistice if this does actually go through. And I want to talk to Suleiman about this. Is he there? Do we have him? We got Suleiman? Okay, I don't know what's up there. I want to talk to him about that. I want to understand that. Point number four, immediately upon the signing of the MOU, the United States will lift the naval blockade and prevent any interference or obstruction against the Islamic Republic of Iran and restore traffic within a maximum of 30 days to its full capacity. The traffic of ships shall be proportional to the pre-war volume of traffic on the part of the Islamic Republic of Iran. The United States also undertakes to withdraw its forces from the surrounding areas within 30 days after the final agreement. So, sounds like the blockade's dead. You know, the thing we spend billions of dollars on a day, thing that's all we got to do it to protect. It's only been hurting. And if we were gone in the first place, they would have to open the strait anyway. You actually don't need this piece of paper. You can just go. And then the impetus would be on them. The world would see them as the villains and not us. And then we wouldn't have to pay $300 billion. Crazy. Point number five, upon signing the MOU, the Islamic Republic of Iran will immediately take steps to ensure the movement of merchant ships from the Persian Gulf to the Sea of Oman and vice versa is resumed within 30 days to the pre-war volume, taking into account the need for removal of technical obstacles. That means mines and neutralization of mines again by Iran. Number six, the United States undertakes together with its regional partners to create a comprehensive plan agreed upon by both parties for the rehabilitation. Oh, we gonna make it reparations. But we gonna make it like a donation. Rehabilitation and economic development of the Islamic Republic of Iran while ensuring financing of at least $300 billion. That's a Boondocks quote for you guys that are going to say that I'm racist. It's a joke. The implementation mechanism of this plan as part of the final agreement will be formulated within 60 days. So they going to get the money. We already spent the money. We already spent the machines, the munitions, the radar. All of that's gone. I am dubbing this the $500 billion war. Okay, or just the $1 trillion war for short. That's what this is. This is us looking at Obama, looking at Biden. This is Trump saying, I can do better. I can do worse. I can spend 10 times the money in 100 times less time. That's what all of this is. It's really embarrassing, guys. The United States, point number seven, commits to ending on a schedule to be agreed upon all types of sanctions currently facing the Islamic Republic of Iran, including resolutions to the UN Security Council and Board of Governors of the International Atomic Energy Agency, IAEA, and all unilateral U.S. sanctions, both primary and secondary. That's because the IAEA, the International Atomic Energy Association, they were spying on the Iranians and they gave targeting data to Israel during the 12-day war. So the Iranians are literally getting everything they want, according to this document. Nothing in here is for us. You know, why would it be? Like, we don't have any interest in fighting this war. This is all against the interest of Israel, which is why you see the dramatic transformation in how Trump is being treated before and after the MOU came out and was declared. Prior to that, it was Heil Trump, the dear leader, can do no wrong.
You know, a lot of people out there, I think they know better than President Trump. They didn't know how to do a better job than my president. I got to tell you right now, I support Donald Trump with all my heart.
And then 5 seconds later, MOU comes out. Peace deal apparently agreed to. We're going to get out of there.
Trump is being weak and he's being tricked by the Iranians. He's a scumbag, ladies and gentlemen.
Like, that's literally how Mark Levin acts. Like, he's entitled to a genocide. He acts like he's entitled to a war. I listened to him in the car now. I practice the impression. It's all true. Like, go listen to him. What was it that he said? He said something along the lines of Trump was the one that, or Trump wants nuclear inspections. The Iranians don't want nuclear inspections. We withdrew from the JCPOA and kicked all those people out of there. So that was Trump breaking the agreement and getting those people out of there, getting the oversight out of there already. They were not the ones that withdrew from the JCPOA. We were. So it's just a complete ignorance of history and the entitlement onto that as like it's a false justification for war. Like, yeah, they had nuclear inspectors. They were ours. We kicked them out of the country. And then they spied on the Israelis and gave them targeting information. So I see him now. We're both wearing the suit. We're both wearing the suit. I don't know if he can hear me just yet. I've got Suleiman of Moral Resistance joining me. Suleiman, I tune in every day. I love it. I've been reading Larry Johnson's Substack on your recommendation. You've shamed me into doing that, man.
Yeah, he's brilliant, Larry, is he? Yes. If you're not following him, you're missing out on life.
Indeed, indeed. So we're kind of getting into all of it. I was talking about how I don't really believe in the prospect of the MOU because these agreements or these arrangements, as I'm reading through them, there's nothing outrageously offensive to the United States of America, but the U.S. is the junior partner. Everything in here is antithetical to the Israelis. There's nothing in here about ballistic missiles, nothing in here about the nuclear, nothing here about any of that. What do you think is the most contentious part of this MOU?
From America's point of view?
Yeah, just in general. You know, give me varying perspectives because you talk to everybody.
Yeah, I think when you look at this document, it basically is a surrender document by the United States of America and Israel. It's shocking how pro-Iran this document is.
Right.
Remember, the leak that's come out from Axios, there's two possibilities. Either they've leaked this before the meeting on Friday because they want to pressure Trump into changing his mind.
Right.
Or this is really the document. Whatever it may be, this is so much in Iran's favor. It's unbelievable. So even in this document, they seem to be saying that they're going to allow Iran to have nuclear-enriched uranium for civilian use. I mean, this is a major concession because on February the 27th, Iran was willing to concede even that. And now this document is saying that they will allow Iran to have nuclear-enriched uranium. They're saying that they'll discuss other elements of it. Trump already conceded that he's willing for Iran to basically dilute the highly enriched uranium.
Right.
And I think the reason they keep saying dilution of uranium and keeping it vague is so their audience don't understand. So there is an agreement that the 60%, the highly enriched uranium, will be diluted. What there's not an agreement about is whether they'll be Iran will give up all the enriched uranium. But Trump's already conceded in this document, according to Axios, that they're going to have enriched uranium. In terms of the Strait of Hormuz, this document says Iran's going to have control over the Strait of Hormuz, complete control over the Strait of Hormuz. The only concession it seems like Iran has given, which I agree with actually logically, but there seems to be that the 60 days, there will be no toll. On the fee, I'm unsure, but let's just assume there won't be. So that's one minor concession. But Iran's going to have total control over the Strait of Hormuz. They didn't have it before with Oman. You then have a scenario where it's going to be complete Israeli removal from Lebanon. The Hatem al-Nabi headquarters from Iran came out and said Israel has violated this agreement 84 times in the last 2 days, and there will be a response. Well, it seems like that threat has worked because already I'm reading right now that the Israelis are leaving certain parts of Lebanon.
Wow.
So I'm seeing that they're leaving Hayam City in South Lebanon. So that's one. Don't take that as they're leaving everywhere. But at the moment, there does seem to be some form of retreat. So this is just total and complete victory from Iran's perspective. There's $300 billion. Trump denied it, but the document seems to quite clearly say that they're going to get paid $300 billion. They're going to be paid and be given the unfrozen assets. We don't know how they're going to be given. The Iranians say 50% immediately. This document doesn't really clarify what it's going to be. But, I mean, in all aspects, it's a complete and total victory by Iran. The only question is, as you said, junior partner. Well, we don't know how the Israelis are going to deal with this.
Yes.
And the Israelis at the moment, although I'm saying that they've retreated from one area, that might just be a random thing. It might be just coincidental.
Right.
And they may be planning something because I can't see logically how someone like Netanyahu can retreat. Because this isn't just Netanyahu. I've always said this. If you look at the entire body of the Israeli political class and the Israeli people, they want this war in Lebanon and Iran to continue. Yes. And so you see, for example, Yair Lapid, who's from the left wing. You see Ben-Gvir from the right wing. You see Naftali Bennett, who is the opposition to Netanyahu. All of them are saying Netanyahu's been weak. He should not retreat from Lebanon. He should continue the war going. If we were in charge, we would continue this war with Lebanon and Iran. So that tells you everything. There's no way logically Netanyahu could retreat.
Right. I'm calling it. I've dubbed it. I hear though dub it the $500 billion war or the $1 trillion war. You think about it. $110 billion spent directly on the conflict. That's what the debt clock says. It's a rough figure. You look at the $300 billion now that's going to be paid by the Gulf states, probably mostly by us or whoever. Another $300 billion to Iran. You look at the radar installations destroyed. Look at the missiles used. Look at the munitions, the bases, all of it. There's no way to even quantify the amount of money that's just been, for lack of a better expression, pissed away in this conflict. That's truly what's happened here. And, you know, we can say, we're going to get into the Ukraine war to deplete Russia's military. What is this? What is this giant disaster? And Suleiman, I wanted to ask you about this before the break. I've been watching, not just reading, of course, the purported MOU, but we've got Trump out there. Was he with the UAE? Or who was he with? He was with UAE. Okay. He's sitting out there. And he goes, yeah, Netanyahu, you don't need to blow up an entire building to kill one guy. You're killing a lot of innocent civilians. It's like he used like a bad word for it. He knows the truth. We all know about the genocide, the war crimes. He doesn't care. That makes him complicit. What do you want people to understand about Trump's knowledge of these events?
Well, I think on that, it's not just Trump. It's every single U.S. president has been aware of these events, right, and what's been happening. And that's Trump as per what you mentioned, but it's also Biden, all of these people, sure. Obama, all of these people have been complicit, more so the last two people. But what he did was give a revelation. And this is what I think is good about Trump in the sense of he reveals the truth,
sure,
which other presidents wouldn't. So he's telling you, look, we were aware that Israel is killing innocent civilians in Lebanon. They don't need to, he goes, they do too much killing. They don't have to destroy an entire apartment building, killing all these civilians under right. this claim that they're going after a resistance member. He's just given us an insight into the reality that the American regime, the American public, the American politicians, the president of the United States, Biden or Trump, were well aware of this slaughter
yes.
of civilians. And also another important point he made was, Rex, he said that Jelani was his guy. Jelani would do whatever he wants. Yes. And that Jelani would do a better job than Israel in Lebanon.
Right. I mean, what do we think the Lebanese people think about the notion of Al-Qaeda terrorists coming into their country? I mean, think about how horrifying that would be. You know, you're somebody living in Lebanon and you hear that the evil empire is about to throw their terror state in there. It's just I feel so bad for the people of the Middle East. And that's why the impetus is on us as Americans to really criticize our own system and call it our own government. These people are living in a hell, and it's a hell that we created. Suleiman, with all this being said, what would you think, before we go to break, the percentage chances of the MOU being signed and us getting that 60 days buffer zone, whatever you want to call it, as they try to reach another agreement?
I think it's highly likely. I think the MOU is going to be signed in Switzerland. I think the 60 days will pass. But I do think we're going to go back to war. Let me be clear on this. I just think that both sides need a bridge, and this kind of provides the bridge for both sides. So from America's side, they need this bridge in order to alleviate the financial global crisis. They need this bridge in order to get past the summer, get past July 4th, get past possibly even the midterms. Right. From Iran's perspective, they need a bit of alleviation as well financially. In addition to that, from Iran's perspective, it is their holy a couple of months as well. I believe people do pilgrimage to Iran and Iraq as well. Right. And so taking both of these things into consideration, I think that the 60 days will hold likely. Obviously, that is obviously without considering the Israeli factor. But can I imagine Benjamin Netanyahu not doing something for 60 days again? This is unlikely. So the wild card in all of this is always Israel.
Right. And is that thing as to the silver lining? I was asking about Trump before. We agree on this principle that Trump is exposing like what the empire is doing. My thing is, as a supporter of Trump in the past, everything I voted for he turned against and went the opposite way. So it exposes to the American people, you don't really have choice, have agency. If you vote to go out of a war or not to go to war in general, to be anti-war, you're going to get a pro-war administration, whether that's Trump, Biden, Obama, Bush, whoever, because that's how the American government works. That's how they make their money, with the military-industrial complex and the permanent bureaucratic class. With all the people you talk to, Suleiman, I know you talk to Larry Johnson a lot. I know you talk to a lot of these phenomenal people. What do they think about, you know, possible future black swan events, the nuclear weapon question, just some of the more random stuff that's out there?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think nearly every single person I speak to, whether from the U.S., and let's be clear, like I speak to the vast majority of the people I speak to are from the United States of America,
right,
from either the American actually military industrial complex, ex-CIA, ex-Green Berets, ex-Lieutenant Colonels, and various other things. They're all unanimous, A, that this war was not for the benefit of the United States of America, B, that this war would be a loss, which it was, and C, that this war will restart at some point again, because you just can't trust the Israelis. The Israelis cannot let this opportunity go. This is their last chance saloon. They know that there is a demographic problem in the United States of America. Yeah. People are becoming anti-Israel. They're never going to get this chance again. They're never going to be able to con another president to go to war. If Trump is right, Trump said this today. He said that Netanyahu begged Obama not to sign the JCPOA, and Obama ignored him. Now, I'm not someone who supports Obama. He's the guy who committed more drone attacks in the Middle East than anyone else. But that being said, it shows that they managed to get Trump to tear up that JCPOA, because Trump's aware that Netanyahu begged Obama and he said no. And the second thing is, they've got Trump to go to this war. Would they be able to get Trump to go back into this war? It makes it a lot more difficult. Would they get a future president to do it? It becomes almost unlikely, unless you've got someone like Rubio as president, and the chances of that are quite low. So I think this is the last chance saloon for them. And so based on that, they do think that's going to happen. In terms of the nuclear aspect, yeah, there is this kind of notion or perspective that because things are going really bad for the United States, America, and Israel, there was a report by, as you mentioned, Larry Johnson and Seymour Hersh, who say that Trump was asking for the nuclear bomb in order to try and
they told him no.
The nuclear bomb.
Yeah.
They did. Apparently, they told him no. And the reason he was asking was because they were failing in attacking Iran's military complexes. They were basically failing to attack Iran's military installations and launch pads. And so out of frustration, he was like, okay, can we use a nuclear bomb? So that's kind of the reasoning for it. So when you see that that's the reasoning, you see that you're dealing with the Israelis and the Samsung option, which is that they would use a nuclear bomb, not just on their foe, but also on their friends. They have the nuclear Samsung option, which is being able to bomb New York, Washington, D.C., London, Berlin, Paris. Right. That tells you that that possibility is always there. And this is why I've always been a big advocate for Iran, that they should be getting a nuclear bomb. And I think it's a failure on their side not to do so.
Well, it's a crazy game. The only way to win is not to play. We'll be right back with Suleiman. Follow Moral Resistance on YouTube. You'll see me on there and a bunch of other amazing folks. That's Moral Resistance on YouTube. We'll be right back. Thank you so much, Suleiman, on short notice for popping in.
Thank you. Appreciate it, Rex.
The 250th birthday limited edition run of awesome designs for this July 4th, 2026 coming up. And they're now available to ship to you as of today, Monday, June 15th, 2026. And they'll be available only through July. They're limited edition, and then that's it. And they fundraise for the broadcast. But I got to say, I'm very impressed with the designs that Bigley came up with. I was heavily involved in this, and the concepts like Praise the Lord and Pass the Ammunition with the rattlesnake and the AR-15, Liberty or Death, 1776 to 2026. That is a really nice shirt. I designed this one, very simple. America 250 years strong. And these are just very clean, Americana, high quality fabric, very comfortable. Destroying Tyranny since 1776. I did that concept. These are very, very clean. I'm proud of these. I think these are shirts everybody would want to wear. I would certainly want to wear these. America, ride fast, live free. Just a classic Betsy Ross flag. 1776 free. They came up with that. I think that's pretty cool. Defund the deep state. That's pretty cool. I like that really clean one right there. 1776, 250 years of freedom. They designed that. Very clean, very nice. So you want nice, clean, patriotic apparel that, you know, won't get you stabbed by a liberal, but other patriots will know who you are. You can kind of promote liberty and kind of identify who you are. It's fun to wear these shirts, I can tell you that right now. You kind of choose your own adventure. You wear an Alex Jones shirt, then you're really going to meet a lot of cool people, but you also might get a bottle smashed over your head. Hundreds and hundreds of great designs from the Gulf of America to you name it. That's a good-looking shirt right there at thealexjonesstore.com.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.